Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome back Jason Tranter of the Mobius Institute. Welcome back, Jason.
Hey, James, how are you going?
Very good, very good. You know, just for those who aren't familiar with Jason, you know, Jason Tranter is the founder and managing director of the Mobius Institute. You've authored many courses, many training topics on the Mobius Institute, and a lot of e-learning products. You've been involved with maintenance and reliability since 1984, and you've been involved in numerous conferences, and now you actually host your own conference. So, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Did I miss anything in that brief introduction?
No, I think that about covers it. You know, I sort of worked with vibration and condition monitoring in the early days and in Australia, then worked in the United States with a company that did consulting in that area and product development, then came back to Australia and after a little while started Mobius Institute. That was like in 1999. So I've been involved with the product development side of condition monitoring systems and all the e-learning and all those other things you just mentioned.
Very good. And last time we got together, we talked about vibration. So I'm kind of curious, what got you into reliability from a vibration standpoint? What made you want to make that journey and continue on that path?
Yeah, good question. As a bit of a brief overview, so in the early days being involved with vibration analysis and then the vibration monitoring systems, I could certainly see the power of what you could do with vibration and condition monitoring in general. So then I got involved in all the product development, and during that time saw that a lot of companies were trying to master vibration analysis and ultimately to try and improve reliability. And after spending a lot of time developing systems and seeing what was capable, but then also seeing what people were actually implementing at their plant, I thought, okay, we need to do much more on the training front so that people would understand better how to use the condition monitoring, but also how you could run a more successful program. So that's how the Mobius Institute, you know, got started in the first place. But as we got involved with training people, and something I don't think was mentioned in the introduction, we have training centers in about 55 countries. We train people all over the world on all these sorts of topics. But the most common theme was that there were a lot of organizations that were trying to improve reliability, and you know, condition monitoring was part of that, and a lot of organizations that needed to do more about reliability but were just focusing on condition monitoring. So that's why about 5 years ago, while we still very much are involved with condition monitoring, it's very important, and vibration analysis, we then thought, well, we can apply the same sorts of techniques, if you like, to helping explain to people how to run a successful reliability improvement program and how to, you know, improve maintenance practices and do all of those sorts of things. So that's a bit of a long-winded way of saying how we got involved with reliability improvement. And we've certainly been involved with that now for some time and helped a lot of companies around the world.
Very good. Very good. Now, I'm going to ask this question because I get a lot of different answers. What is reliability? What do you think reliability is?
Well, it is a very good question. It is a very good question because from a vibration analyst's point of view, they might think, well, if I can stop the machine from failing because I've detected a fault and we sort of manage the corrective maintenance process, then I am improving reliability. Now, in terms of that machine, I am not actually improving the reliability because it developed a fault condition and it had to be stopped and a bearing replaced or something like that. From the plant's point of view, it can say that it is now more reliable, it's dependable, it is better able to deliver its product for a reasonable cost or provide a service. But, you know, I think reliability needs to be addressed sort of at different levels. We can improve the reliability of the equipment itself, and that is the ability to operate that equipment when we need to operate it. We need to be able to operate it at the it needs to run, but it needs to produce quality product, and it needs to be able to do it at the desired rate, you know, the number of widgets per hour or whatever. So to do that, we need to do more than just monitor it and save it from catastrophically failing. We need to take measures so that it is more dependable. It can perform the function as desired. So that's a roundabout way of answering.
No, it's perfect, because I think it's important to differentiate what reliability means to different people. As you mentioned, for that vibration tech or condition monitoring tech, they understand that by doing this, we're going to be able to plan the repair and prevent unplanned downtime. From a plant perspective, they look at it a little bit different, right? And everyone has these different definitions, so it's very important that when we talk about reliability, that everyone's talking the same verbiage, if you will.
Yeah. The other little comment I would make, too, is that some people get so tangled up with reliability, and they develop KPIs and all of that, and I think that one of the most important messages is to understand that, you know, it's not reliability for reliability's sake. You know, it's not the goal to create fantastic KPIs. The goal is for the organization to be able to achieve its objectives, and that is that equipment is running when it needs to run for the lowest possible cost. So, you know, we don't want to have excessive planned or unplanned downtime. We don't want to have to spend huge sums of money to provide that reliability. Obviously, at the end of the day, we have to add value. So we have to watch what this effort to improve reliability is costing us. But at the end of the day, it's all about delivering equipment that operate when called upon, not just about, you know, achieving some sort of KPIs in terms of the downtime or efficient maintenance or something like that.
Yes, I couldn't agree more, and I'm glad you brought up that KPI point. One of the things I talk about with clients on a regular basis is they're striving for, you know, 100% reliability, 99.9% reliability. Well, you're not NASA, you're not the nuclear navy. You don't need to operate at that level. You need to operate at the level that's best for the business. If your business goals tells you you need to operate at, say, 75 or 80% OE, then that's what you strive for. Don't spend all this extra money for that diminishing returns at the end of the day.
And in fact, you know, one of the key things, without diving into detail at this time, but, you know, when we talk to customers about reliability improvement, one of the very first things we ask them to do is to go through an assessment to understand the business needs. You know, we call it the business process review, but just to say, what is actually important to this business? You know, is it about reducing costs? Is it about increasing throughput or production output? You know, are we trying to extend the life of assets? Is it sort of dependability in terms of wastewater treatment or something like that? I mean, you really have to understand what the organization is trying to achieve, and then everything else flows on from that. How you determine criticality of assets flows on from that. How you justify anything you do flows on from that. So many companies or so many people dive into this idea of reliability without really giving much thought at all to that. You know, they just say, well, you know, if I can put in a lot of effort to, you know, reduce downtime, then that must therefore be a good thing and must therefore be justifiable. But you really need to go through that business process review to assess that.
Yep, absolutely. So we've talked about it, but why is reliability so important to organizations?
Well, again, it depends on the nature of the organization, but we can, through these reliability improvement efforts, number one, we can create a safer organization. You know, we can improve safety by stopping equipment failure, which might lead to an explosion or something like that. But one thing for sure is that a reliable asset is, well, safer to work around, And when you are doing your maintenance work, if you have to rush to do the job, if you don't have the right tools, procedures, if you don't have the right skills and everything else, that's a more dangerous situation versus one that's much more organized where there's training and so on. So safety is one goal. Environmental is another goal, both from the spills that might occur and the environmental leaks and so on, but just the wastage of energy, wastage of material. But we can certainly reduce downtime. We can certainly reduce the amount of planned downtime that's required. So overall, we can achieve a much better OEE. We can extend the life of assets. So there's, depending on the organization, there are a lot of benefits there. And from the human point of view as well, rather than going to work and just having to deal with the next emergency and the next emergency and being called out on the weekend or at 2 a.m. at night because some machine's failed, it's much more satisfying to work in an organization where you can truly take pride in the work that you're doing, that there's an emotional reward for that, that the business is stable and sound and you can really count on future employment. That's what's going to happen in a reliable plant as against one that's struggling with reactive maintenance and the rest.
Absolutely. All great points. And, the one thing I've seen as a result of reliability improvements as well is people don't think about it, but insurance rates start to come down depending on who your insurer is. They're pushing for asset management, maintenance plans, those sort of things. And when they see that and they understand the risks and know you understand the risks, I've seen reduction in that occur as well. So,
well, that's for sure. And, it's also the insurability. When insurance companies are looking at clients, there have been situations where insurance company doesn't want to insure a company because they say, well, your track record shows that the risks are too high. So that's another side of it.
Yep. Now, what are a couple of key things that an organization must consider when they want to start down this reliability improvement journey, if you will?
Okay. So there's a lot of things I could say at this point. The real key for me is that when you read certain books, when you go to certain conferences, where you read certain articles and so on, there can be a lot of emphasis on sort of technical solutions. So we can very specifically look at, for example, condition monitoring technologies. We can look at some of the maintenance techniques like precision alignment, precision lubrication, and so on, that'll help improve reliability. We can get very focused on RCM, reliability-centered maintenance, and failure modes effects analysis, and root cause failure analysis. We can go through all these elements and say, oh, yeah, to run a successful program, we need to be able to tick the box next to all of these elements. And all those elements are pretty obvious what they are, and they've been known about for the last 50 years or whatever. It's really, people have been trying to do this stuff for a long time. The trouble that I see is that people hear about those things and then say, okay, I do need to check those boxes, so let's go out and buy some root cause failure analysis software perhaps to manage that, and we'll buy a vibration system and we'll get someone started with that, and we'll go and buy a laser alignment system, etc., etc., etc. And they miss what I think is the most critical point, and that is that without dealing with the culture of the organization, none of that will be successful. It's not to say that measuring vibration will not achieve a positive ROI. It does make sense to do it, even if it's in isolation. You won't be achieving the best results. You can buy a laser alignment system, but will it be used to achieve precision alignment or just better alignment results than before? So I think the biggest key is to lay the groundwork first. You've got to get senior management support. You've got to achieve culture change. And that's not just having people begrudgingly saying, oh, yeah, reliability is important, or, okay, yeah, if you want me to use this laser alignment system, I'll do it, and okay, you've got this new planner and scheduler, we'll listen to what that person says. Or, you can have this great reluctance but some level of acceptance to follow along. Instead, what needs to be achieved is a complete reversal where it really is driven by the people working in the plant because they understand the benefits and they've been included in the process. And you know, it's this touchy-feely stuff, which I think a lot of technical people who try to address this reliability issue, you know, it's the stuff that they're perhaps not quite as comfortable with. It's much easier to go out and buy something and do that and say, hey, look, boss, you know, I've achieved something. We've bought this thing. We chose the best system, and off we go. And it is down there being used. It might be in a cupboard gathering dust, but that's not really the issue at that point. You know, they've done it. They've checked the box. We're using precision alignments. And, of course, we can go through all of those areas. So it's really key to lay the groundwork so that you are set up for success. And then when you do implement these, yeah, the elements, these various components of a reliability improvement program, they will be successful, and they will, you know, there'll be a lot of enthusiasm and acceptance of the implementation of those changes that you need to make. And better still, if those ideas and suggestions are coming from the people working in the organization, you know, the operators and maintenance technicians and so on, rather than being sort of forced upon them by some little exclusive reliability group.
I couldn't agree more. People are, to me, the first thing that needs to be addressed, the culture, gaining that understanding, that trust with them to move this forward. Without that, trying to launch a reliability improvement program is almost impossible. You can do, like you mentioned, you can do certain tactical things very well, but overall, that program will not mature and deliver the results that you expect.
Yeah, and that's sort of what got me involved. You know, going back to the start, I've seen it now. You know, I've been around for 30-something years now involved with this, and, you know, I call it the reliability roller coaster. You know, you just see organizations go through these cycles where there's probably been some sort of failure, and someone said, well, we can't let that happen again. So they might appoint someone or get in some consultants, whatever, and they'll purchase this and purchase that and do this and do that and maybe attend a couple of conferences, and they'll make some improvements and they'll make, you know, have some gains, but it doesn't take long before either senior management say, ah, we're spending too much money, we haven't had a failure like that for a while, or the people involved just lose heart and get frustrated by it and leave, or they get promoted up out of there or whatever, and the company slides back down and experiencing worse reliability and less warning about failures. Then something bad happens, so they start again. And, you know, I've seen organizations go through that two or three or more times, you know, over the years. And you think, well, you've just got to get off that roller coaster ride. You've just got to say, we're going to lay the foundation and we're going to see that reliability isn't some thing that you fix in the next 6 months and then it's fixed forever. You know, I think, you know, I started at the beginning talking about safety, and I think people need to, you know, use that same process. You know, safety was never considered something that you just fix. You know, everyone's involved with safety. Everyone understands why safety is important. Senior management will always talk about safety. There'll be a scoreboard out the front saying, you know, when the last lost time incident was, etc. It's always front of mind, and that's what needs to happen with reliability. It needs to be front of mind. It needs to be a long-term part of the organization's culture, and then all of these things will work and they'll just become second nature. They will become second nature. But when you do achieve higher levels of reliability, you just have to resist the temptation to say, oh, well, you know, we don't have a reliability problem, but we sure employ a few people who are focused on reliability, so maybe we could save some money. And that's one of the reasons people fall down the other side of the roller coaster ride. You know, someone thinks they can save some money, and they will just for a little while, and then it'll come back at them, you know, worse than before, so, and very quickly.
I was working with an organization not too long ago, and I was sitting down with their vibration techs, and they have two, both level two certified. We're having a conversation about their vibration program, and I asked them, well, how do you report what you find, you know, your failure prevention? And comment was, well, they know what we do. We don't have to report, you know, the potential savings or any of that stuff that we've uncovered. I said, well, if you don't have any major failures in a while, how are you going to be able to justify your program, your tooling, your training, all those things? Well, they just understand our value. I'm like, Okay, we need to start documenting some of these things and making sure we keep that visibility.
Oh, that is so important. And I've seen so many vibration programs just fail because of it. You know, people just get let go. One conference, I guess it's a few years ago now, this group stood up to be awarded the program of the year, the condition monitoring program of the year. And at the end of their little acceptance speech, they said, oh, and by the way, we are all available because we've all just been laid off. And so this was supposedly the best of the best. So, I mean, it raises some questions about the selection criteria, but these guys ticked all the boxes in terms of the technologies and how often measurements were being taken and all that kind of stuff, but they obviously weren't selling the benefit. Management did not understand why they needed to continue the monitoring and continue the reliability improvement efforts. And so, you know, there's some young manager perhaps who's, you know, got a little gold star that month for saving their organization money. And as long as he or she gets, you know, promoted out of there or transferred or gets another job, you know, it's never the impact of making that decision. They don't have to take responsibility for that decision. So yeah, it happens all the time.
Absolutely.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out Iridicio's IBL Blended Learning for Maintenance and Reliability Professionals. This SMRP-accredited project-based curriculum will take you through all aspects of a maintenance and reliability program and provides you with all the tools you need to generate a 30 times return on investment for your organization and a set of credentials from the University of Tennessee for you. You can find out more at ibltraining.com.
So, you know, now that we understand what's important, what we need to consider, and some of the documentation that we just touched on, how does one actually start this journey of reliability improvement?
Okay. Well, I guess, you know, part of it depends on where the organization is right now. Because if, on the one hand, you walked into an organization and they just were basically at the starting point, as in fully reactive maintenance, very little planned maintenance, no predictive maintenance, no condition monitoring technologies and so on, you know, you might answer that one way versus someone who's already doing some of those. But I think you can summarize the process the same no matter what. And that is, you need to start by doing a basic assessment of what the needs are of the organization, that business process review that I mentioned earlier, and then an assessment of what you are doing well and what you're doing that's not so good, and then put a value on that. So you can say, okay, well, this is the way we are treating our assets. This is the amount of downtime. These are our current practices in terms of all the areas that we've mentioned, alignment, balancing, lubrication, but, you know, maintenance planning and scheduling and all these other elements that we talk about. You need to do that assessment and then put a value on it. You know, what is our opportunity here? But of course, all that starts with an understanding of what the organization is trying to achieve. Is it a company that's making tires and every tire they manufacture they can sell? Or, you know, is it a case where, well, you know, there's not demand for the product, so we do have downtime kind of forced on us. So that just changes the equation. But ultimately, you need to understand that and do that assessment. Then you need to make sure you've got internal support. So, you know, rather than if you were a reliability engineer and you say, well, hey, this is important for this organization, but I can't, you know, just spend the business's money on something like this and do this independently. So you might do that assessment independently, but then you need to bring on people within the organization to get that support before you go to the senior management, the senior executive, to say, this is the proposal, this is the plan forward. Now, two things. One is that when you go to senior management, obviously, well, maybe not obviously, you're not going to just talk to them technically. Oh, this is what RCM is. This is what root cause failure analysis is. This is what a vibration spectrum is. And they're going to say, what are you talking about? Instead, you're basically going to them with a business plan to say, this is how we can achieve these goals. This is what we're trying to achieve, and this is basically how we will do it. You know, understanding the needs of the business, you can do that. But one extra step I would put in there is that, A, it makes sense to get some momentum, get some results going. So rather than trying to start and do everything right from the start, it's good to get some runs on the board, as we would say. So I would suggest, unless you've already got a program going and you can really point to some existing results, you might start with some like little starter projects or proof of concept projects. You get the right people involved. You tackle some of those problems that have been problems at the plant for some time that are kind of visible. And if you can start making some improvements that don't cost much money, there's so much that can be done without spending much money, then you can say to people within the organization and senior management, okay, this is what the business needs are, this is what we're like now, this is what the opportunity is, and look what we've already achieved. So this isn't some thing that, oh, they did it this plant and that plant but wouldn't work here. So many people think, oh, but that wouldn't work here. You can say, no, it is working here already. And if you can go in front of senior management with this business plan and proof that it's actually working and that you've got the skills to do it, then you're going to get that support. And, you know, getting that support also means not just, okay, I'll sign this check and I don't want to hear about this again. You need that visible support so that they are, it's being driven from the top. There's that, you know, obvious dedication to this. It's not just another flavor of the month program. It's, this is real, this is forever. And then we need to put together perhaps a, you know, call it a steering committee or a team or whatever of people so that you are involving. This isn't just being driven from the maintenance group, for example, or maybe a reliability group gets set up. You need to involve the operations and production people, the maintenance people, the safety and quality people, and so on. You know, there has to be complete buy-in, and they have to feel that they're not just being told what to do, that they are part of the decision-making process and everything else. And look, I'll talk too long if I go through it all, but basically you then can create a real plan. You can understand criticality, which systems are critical and hopefully which assets are critical, and then you can start saying, right, we understand what we're good at and what we're not. Probably we need to get, you know, the maintenance process under control. We need to get out of that reactive maintenance cycle of doom, as I like to call it. You know, it's no point throwing in condition monitoring and doing all these things after what we've just said if the key that I actually just skipped right over is the culture change part. So now we have senior management support. We can start talking to people about what we're doing, providing education, demystifying all these topics, and basically asking them for their suggestions. You know, what is it that you see going on that either wastes your time, causes problems, results in downtime, etc.? And once you get those suggestions and you act on those suggestions, now there's a couple of ways you can do this, but when you get that going, so people understand why they're doing it, why they benefit from reliability improvement, when the various topics and things that we're talking about are demystified, and when they see, oh, this isn't just a couple of engineers in some room somewhere in the organization that are telling me what to do, they're actually asking me for my suggestions, they're asking for me to tell them about all the experience that I have with my equipment that I work with day in, day out, well then, you know, it makes such a difference to the culture. And then when you then start going through and implementing these changes, they say, wow, they're actually doing something. They're actually, you know, they've taken my suggestion, or I've even been involved with the implementation, and now these problems have gone away. Now we don't have that same downtime on this particular machine that we've struggled with for the last 5 years. You know, when they start seeing that, it just catches fire, you know, and everyone wants to get involved, and you can then start really rolling out and improving all of the processes. You can get, you know, work plans in place. I mean, there's so much more you can do, but that's all the stuff that's often talked about. It's all those things that need to come first that often get skipped, either because people don't know about it or it maybe falls into the too hard basket.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you touched on some great points there. Finance, understanding finance speak, understanding those terms, being able to communicate at that VP CEO level, and not talking to them about the tactical RCM things, but being able to talk about the return on net assets and those various things is so important to gaining that support.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, we talked about a lot of different things there. Did we miss any major steps to the reliability improvement journey?
Oh, I'm quickly going over it in my mind, but I think I touched on them. The major things are understanding what you need to do, what you are doing, and therefore what the opportunity is, getting senior management on board, and getting the culture right. Because once you've got that sort of tidal wave of interest and enthusiasm, then all the other obvious kinds of things, like everything you need to do with spare parts management, work management, the condition monitoring, all the rest of it, root cause failure analysis, understanding criticality. I mean, there are a lot of important components. It's just that in my mind, they need to be part of a bigger, more structured plan. If you do the right things at the right time, then this will work. If you just dive in and say, well, I understand about criticality analysis, I'm just going to go do that now. Well, it's not to say that it's not a bad thing to do, but again, it just needs to sort of fit into a bigger strategy.
Yes, couldn't agree more with that. Now, we talked about people and we talked about culture, and to me, one of the most important things that we can do is to bring awareness and educate people in the various roles about reliability, their role in reliability, the importance of that reliability improvement journey. More importantly, their specific responsibilities in reliability. So
yes.
With that, how do we educate all the different levels in the organization and do it effectively and efficiently?
Right. And briefly, I want to touch on that point you just made there about responsibilities. I think when people understand their roles of responsibility, that's a key one. But look, when it comes to the education of all of this, you're absolutely right that everyone needs to understand it at their different levels within the organization. The reason we do what we do is because what I see, I mean, we run conferences, as you say, and I speak at a lot of conferences, and you see courses out there that are very specific to planning and scheduling or vibration analysis or whatever it is. What I see in a lot of organizations is that certain people go out and they get their education in their specialist area. So you have someone that's quite knowledgeable in this area and that area and so on as they need to be. Now, first, any training is often flawed because you go into a room, you sit there for 3 days or whatever it is, you know, 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, whatever. You get bombarded with all this stuff and it's all good, you know, for just right then. And then you leave and you come back and you've probably got all kinds of things going on at work. Well, what have you remembered a week later, a month later, 6 months later, etc.? You know, it's very hard with conventional training, whether it's on-site or off-site. It can be very difficult to retain all of that. The other issue you have is that now you understand planning and scheduling, but no one else around you really understands it. And as a planner and scheduler, for example, you would like to know a bit about condition monitoring because they're the ones coming to you saying, oh, this bearing's got a problem. You know, we need to balance this or whatever. And you don't perhaps really understand the philosophy of condition-based maintenance. You may not have any idea about those technologies. So it's like, well, do I really feel comfortable making these decisions because some person has said that there's a problem on the bearing? And likewise, the person in condition monitoring doesn't really understand the requirements of the person in planning and scheduling, you know, what information they need, how it needs to be presented, and so on. And you can go through so many interactions within an organization between planning and scheduling and condition monitoring, or the way operators work, the way maintenance technicians work, and electricians, and the person in managing spares, and the, you know, you can go all the way through the organization. So the analogy I like to draw is that if an organization said to me, okay, come in and enlighten us on this whole story. So one way to do it would be to say, okay, let's all sit in a room for a day, everyone. We're going to shut down the plant. You're all going to sit in a room and I'm going to tell you all about this. Well, of course, other than the massive cost that that would involve, what's going to happen is there's a bunch of people who haven't learned nearly enough to go off and be successful, and there's going to be a bunch of people who are learning way too much than they really need. So then you say, okay, well, that's not going to work. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through and talk to different groups. When I'm talking to the maintenance technicians, there's a whole lot I want to tell them, and I want to present it at a certain level. When I talk to the planners and schedulers, I want to talk to them in detail about planning and scheduling, but in less detail about condition monitoring, let's say. And if I'm talking to the reliability engineers, again, there's certain detail and certain content they need to know in detail versus other topics. So that's why we created iLearn Reliability. Okay, warning, warning, here comes the sales pitch. Because the only way we could see to get around this problem is to create e-learning on the majority of these topics, and we're developing new content all the time, but to do it at different levels and to do it in such a way that basically anyone can learn, well, anything is a big word, but at any time. So using e-learning, it means that a person can get a 10-minute introduction to a particular topic, either because they need a refresher or because 10 minutes is all they need. And using all the animations and all the fun stuff means that it's engaging and you can remember it. And being self-paced means that if you don't understand something, you can go back over it very easily. You can't put your hand up all the time when you're at a training class and say, can you explain that again? I just don't get it. So by having all of these modules that are pitched at different levels, so there are different levels of detail, and covering all of these topics, it really means that you can educate everyone to the required level and re-educate those people and have onboarding training. And, you know, even contractors coming in, you can say, well, you need to go through these modules so you understand how we do things here. And, you know, people change positions and they need to be trained and so on and so forth. So we saw that as a solution. We do run live training courses. We run them all over the world. In those cases, we give people pre-training and post-training as well as the actual classroom training. But we see e-learning as a very convenient way for people to get the training when they need it at a very affordable cost. You know, it can work in with all their other time demands and so on, so that everyone is educated, but also you can roll it out so that, you know, you educate certain people now and other people a bit later, and you can do this at multiple sites all in parallel, and that way all the sites are all improving in parallel. They can learn from each other, but they're sort of learning the same methodology, the same language, the same terminology and so on, and, you know, it can all happen at once very affordably, rather than people, individuals going off to training courses or waiting for consultants to come and do things at your plant or something like that. That's a very long-winded way of answering that question, but that's exactly why we exist, to try and do it that way.
Yeah, no, I think it's important that you touched on different roles require different levels of understanding. You're not going to put everyone in a 4-day or 3-day plan scheduling course. Planners need to have that level of detail, but everyone else needs to have an awareness of it. And I agree, e-learning is a good way to do that. And one of the ways to make it more effective, as you mentioned, is that pre-work and that post-work piece, having that follow-up for so many weeks after, challenges, regular coaching conversations, those things make it much more effective in ensuring they take away that knowledge from that e-learning, but also apply it.
Yes, exactly. Yep.
So is that education piece why so many organizations fail at improving reliability?
Well, I think that is one of the reasons. I mean, there are a lot of reasons, because we've talked about all these things you should do: senior management support, culture change, having a plan, all those things. Well, if you don't do any of those things, you will end up in the same place. Education is both education on the strategy for how to do it is important. Education on all the little elements and how to implement each step is all very important. But certainly, you know, one of the issues that I see is an organization will say, okay, we accept we need to do something about reliability. We'll start a reliability group. We'll have 1, 2, 3 people in there. And suddenly it's seen as their problem and their job to fix reliability. So, of course, production's blaming maintenance, and maintenance is blaming production, but now they both point the fingers at reliability and say, hey, we're having these problems, how come you haven't fixed it yet? And it's like, whoa, you know, it's not their job to fix it, it's their job to facilitate the improvement, because everyone's going to be involved. Operations will understand what they can do, maintenance will understand what they can do, etc., etc. So I see organizations where you have a person that's certified as whatever, and they've been on all this training, and they say, no, I am the owner of all this knowledge. See my brain. It's very large. You know, I've mastered all this stuff. And they feel, well, perhaps being a little critical, but they sort of hoard the knowledge. There's not enough education going on within the rest of the organization. And even sometimes they say, well, yeah, I do see the need to educate. So they'll run some little sessions, and that's great. So they'll spread some of the information. But it's something that happens, you know, over a couple of months or whatever, and pretty soon it's all forgotten. And there's no follow-up. There's no follow-up actions. It's basically, for me, and the way we develop the strategy that we teach and all of that is by looking at all the programs out there, and there's unfortunately not a lot of them, but the companies out there that got it right. And you say, what are all the pieces that they got right? And basically, what order did they do it? And then when you look at all the companies that have struggled and failed, and then they've tried again and failed again, you can look at all the reasons why. And you can say, okay, well, you solve that problem by doing this. You solve that problem by doing that. You avoid this issue by doing this. And so ultimately you come up with a strategy to say, do these things in these orders, in this order, get credit for the things you're already doing well, but make sure you've got all the pieces in place before you try to get too fancy and not just sort of jump into the, you know, the most obvious sort of elements that people talk about.
Absolutely. So with all that, all those gaps or potential issues in rolling out a reliability improvement program, is a framework required? Or can organizations just, you know, pull pieces that they want? I think we already answered this, but I just want to make sure it's clear.
Yeah, look, I think a framework is required. I mean, it doesn't have to be a super rigid one, but as long as you're going into the whole thing with your eyes wide open and you realize these are the reasons why following a certain strategy may fail, and this is what I can do to make it successful. As long as you do have your eyes wide open to all those sorts of issues, then you can go about it properly. Otherwise, as I say, you know, someone can give a presentation at a conference like I've done. Oh, this is all about criticality analysis. And everyone comes up afterwards, oh, that was great. I'm sounding like I'm boasting right now, but, you know, that's cool. We need to go and do that. And I keep saying, yeah, but have you done these other things as well? Like, yes, it's important to do it, and there are challenges with doing something like criticality analysis like there is with all of the different ingredients that you need. But it's all about doing things in the right order and having a sort of a systematized approach to it, which I think makes it work.
Yep, I definitely agree. And the key to me for having that roadmap or framework is for it to be flexible for what the organization's end goals are. And you touched on that, not a rigid one. And I think that's vitally important because while most frameworks will work for most organizations, they can't be that rigid. They have to be flexible to account for size, operating strategy, future goals, all those various things. So,
yeah, and that's why you need to start with that business process review to say, all right, what do we need to achieve here? Like, and then what are we good at? And what aren't we so good at? And that's why we said that's what you do right up front. And now everything you do from now on is being done to add value to your organization. You're not doing anything for the sake of doing it. You're doing everything to add value because it makes sense, because you understand the needs of the organization, and, you know, senior management have sort of signed off on it that, yes, we agree. Yes, this is what we're trying to achieve. So this is what we therefore want to improve.
Yep. And, you know, when we keep talking about this value piece, and it's a question I get quite often, so I'm interested to hear your opinion on it. How does one translate the improvement in reliability into financial goals for an organization?
Well, that's a tricky question. It comes back initially to that assessment of what's important to the organization, what the current practices are now, and what it's therefore costing you. Because in a really simple example, you can say, right, well, this is the OEE we're achieving now, the overall equipment effectiveness. I can look at how much downtime, what my quality is and what my throughput is, and this is what I believe I can achieve. And therefore, that has a value to the organization. Now, it is difficult to say, well, if I get this laser alignment system, this is my ROI. You know, like this individual piece. You know, this is the business benefit of buying this one tool. I think you need to step back first and say, okay, this is what we're trying to achieve. This is what the value is. And to achieve that value, there are certain things we need to do. And buying that laser alignment system is one of them. And yes, you can go through and say, well, we believe it's causing downtime, and therefore if we do it, you know, we'll have less downtime. But quantifying things at that level, you know, is a bit more difficult. Quantifying things at the higher level does make more sense. And then, you know, you can take that a step further and say, well, you know, there's a certain amount of investment required. There's a certain benefit that we'll achieve. But it's not that you have to sit down on day one and say, okay, write a check for $1 million and this is what I'm going to go and do. You know, you can start small. You can prove yourself along the way. There's so much you can do without spending any money. I mean, you'll spend time, you'll make changes, but not necessarily invest funds beyond, you know, training and maybe some consulting assistance, just assistance rather than a, you know, full bore consulting team perhaps. Anyway, I think that's the way to do it. Now, you can also use benchmarking and sort of say, well, industry best practice. There are pros and cons to doing that. If you're able to say, well, this is what the design capacity of the plant is and this is what we're achieving, that's good. If you're able to look back 3 years and say, hey, this is what our plant was creating back then, this is what we were achieving back then, and now we are unable to achieve those results, then you can very clearly say, well, here's the gap. This is what the value is then of us improving reliability. So I hope that answers the question.
Oh, absolutely. And it's, you know, I often have organizations struggle to try and deliver the return on investment for that alignment system, for that vibration device, and it is very, very difficult. So I'm glad you pointed out that at the higher levels, it's a bit easier, and it's a bit more practical at that level. So with that, do you have any words of wisdom that you want to share with people who are starting their improvement journey?
Well, I suppose... you know, it can perhaps appear daunting. You perhaps are looking at the rest of the organization and thinking, no one really agrees with this. People who are being called out in the middle of the night but being rewarded for that, you know, when most of the people being rewarded are those who get the overtime because there's failure, you might say, well, gosh, how are we going to do that? There may potentially be questions about the union support. You may look at other managers and say, no one's going to support this. And then you listen to podcasts like this, or you read, you know, the various books and say, wow, I should be implementing this and this and this and this. It can all seem daunting, but it's, you know, it's like the cliche. If you're going to, you know, try and climb Mount Everest, there's all this planning and preparation, and one step leads to the next, and you will get there if you properly plan and properly prepare and, you know, properly follow a plan. So that's what I would say. Like, don't try and look at the heights and say, oh my goodness, how am I going to achieve that? The one thing I would say is, you know, what would you like to be able to say after 1 year? You have a chance, you know, this time next year, to either say, oh gosh, I'm still frustrated, I've still gotten nowhere, I've spun my wheels, I've tried a bit of this and that, or you can say, wow, I have actually achieved something. You know, we're not world's best practice, but we have made improvements. And, you know, by selecting the right KPIs, you can show what those improvements are. And you personally can get the sense of achievement, of the progress that's being made. You can report that, and other people will see those changes starting to happen. You know, a year flies by, and you'd really, I think, just have to say, yeah, if I could, you know, have some improvement over a period of a year. It's not to say that you can't make changes quickly or more quickly than what I might have suggested just then, but you don't have to rush. You know, you may have been working in the plant for quite a few years, and this plant might have been working with reactive maintenance and so on for quite some time. So as long as you say, I'm going to just chip away at it in a structured, planned way. I'm going to choose my fights. I'm going to, you know, take on these issues in the way that we've described. You will make progress, and you will be able to look back and say, wow, look how far we've come. Yep, we may still have a long way to go, but look how far we've come, and let's keep that momentum going. Let's keep making progress.
Yeah, I agree. Oftentimes, I don't take the time to look back and see where I've come from, what I've accomplished. But when I do, it gives you that huge sense of accomplishment, and it motivates you to continue to push forward and work through the grind and that those hardships that you encounter.
You know, one thing we're just about to release in our software, not to, and that sounds very product oriented, but you can do it yourself. If you have a plan, so what we try and do, we've got this roadmap thing, and there's all these different stages, and each stage has different steps, and each step has like little milestones. And we've deliberately, we haven't actually released it just at the time I'm recording this, but it's coming real soon. What you'll be able to do is, as you achieve every one of those little milestones, so every little thing that you do, you get to tick it off or check it. You know, you get to say, I've done that, I've done that. You can actually rank it. You know, how if you feel like, well, I've done it, but I haven't completely done it, well, then you give yourself a little, you know, 5 out of 10 sort of thing. The point is that the system then sort of monitors your progress, and you have great satisfaction in being able to say, I've done that. I have done that. And you get to see what the next step is. You get to see the sort of the steps that you should be following. You get to take credit for the things that have already been done before you start using a system like that. But whether you use our system or you just create yourself a big wall chart and list all the things you feel you need to do, it's very satisfying to be able to tick off each item off that list, and it's satisfying to be able to look back and say, hey, great, look at all the things I've done. Maybe each year you use a different colored pen to do it, and you can say, oh, look at all those green check marks there. That's what we did in 2016. And in 2017, here are these blue ones, and so on and so forth. So I think you just need to have that sense of the progress you're making. But with culture change, when you deal with the culture change issues, you know, things can happen more quickly. You'll get to check off more of those things, and you'll just feel the vibe around you. People will be very encouraging of these sorts of changes rather than resistant to the changes.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Now, if you could have our listeners take away one thing from this whole conversation today, what would it be?
Gee, just one thing. Okay. I would say you need a plan so that you can prepare an organized approach to this rather than just diving in and taking on these elements as I described them earlier. If you have a plan that includes the culture change and the senior management support and all those things, if you have a plan and you've got that list of items you need to check off, then you can be successful. You'll know what to do and when to do it, and you'll have the satisfaction of making progress.
Yep, perfect. That's something everyone can take away from this and implement tomorrow if they want. So now, where can people find out more about you? iLearn Reliability, this framework or roadmap that you have coming out soon, as well as some of your conferences.
Okay, so we have a website, www.mobius, so it's M for Mary, O-B-I-U-S, institute.com, and you'll see links there for the sort of the condition monitoring sorts of things we do, the reliability improvement things we do, and the conferences. The conferences are called IMVAC. Now, we focus for our own conferences on vibration analysis and condition monitoring because there already are other reliability conferences like SMRP, you know, so we thought, well, at this stage, rather than trying to duplicate stuff that's out there, let's do something where people really need help. So you'll see stuff on our website or vibrationconference.com. But if you go to mobiusinstitute.com/reliability, that will take you straight to the iLearn Reliability side of things. Also, if you just Google Roadmap to Reliability Mobius Institute or something like that, you'll find movies on YouTube that talk a bit about it, webinars that we've recorded, lots of webinars on some of the detailed topics as well as the bigger picture topics.
Excellent. And you mentioned that at the time of this recording, that tool is not yet available. When do we expect that tool to become available?
We are recording this in early 2017, for sure by mid 2017. And like the software is actually developed. It's just we're making all these little movies to explain each and every single step. So the software is actually ready to go. It's just all the little movies. And so they will explain the sort of the stages as a whole, then the steps as a whole, and then each of the individual sort of sub-steps so that you get the complete flow. You can use it on, you know, tablets and all those sorts of things as well as the computer. And it logs your progress through the whole thing. So we'll make an announcement about that as we go along. But right now, we already have a roadmap in the product. We have, you know, lots of good training in there right now on all of these topics that we've talked about. Oh, the other little thing I should just mention too is that if you go to our website, you'll see we have newsletters and they're, you know, full of good content, but also one called 9 Minutes of Knowledge. And so what we do is we create short videos, which are 9 minutes or less, on various focused topics, and you get these regular emails that say, here's another video, and you can watch it. So there's this big, long series. You can just watch them one after another when the automated email comes out. And people absolutely love those because, okay, I keep talking, and it takes a bit of time to listen to this, but we've talked about a lot of individual things. So these 9 minutes of knowledge just sort of break it down into the, you know, small little chunks. And, we've had a lot of very positive feedback about those emails, and they get forwarded on to lots of people within organizations and all that sort of thing. So take a look at that.
Excellent. And we'll make sure to link to all these in the show notes as well. So they don't have to do the searching. They can just click on the little blurb at the bottom of the show notes, and it'll take them right to the websites or those landing pages for you. So try and make it easy for everyone.
Okay. Good, good.
All right. Well, Jason, I want to thank you for taking the time out today to walk through the reliability improvement journey. It is vital, and you touched on some amazing points. The culture, the finance, having a plan, the education, all vital, vital pieces to making that successful. So I know I walked away with some learnings, and I'm sure our listeners did as well. So thank you again.
Thank you very much, and I hope it has been helpful.
Absolutely. Well, have a good night.
You too. Thanks.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.